Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk with Michael Wilbon about the World Cup and whether he would do a cameo in a Hallmark movie about Chicago Bears. And we'll also chat with Mark Feinsand about the big surprises around baseball as we hit the halfway point of the season. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We do this monthly podcast together. We call it Dynastic. And each month, we do this deep dive into one franchise and sort of tell the story in a 3-hour podcast. Tell
what?
The story. We don't expect. Yeah, we don't expect you to listen to it.
What?
Once a month?
Yes. Yes, it's monthly. You know.
Why don't you do a half hour more often?
What's
hours.
What's your Thursday show?
That's like taking a course. Yeah. What?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
You would be amazed at how many people have no idea what a podcast is or how many people do them or what it's supposed to be. I was out on a golf course on Friday with some fella that I was playing with who wanted to know about podcasts. And we make the assumption that everyone knows exactly what they are. And it's not true. And I tried to explain to him, a podcast is just anything you want it to be.
Yeah.
Issued as regularly as you want it to be issued and listened to by no one outside of your immediate family. So, you know, so that set him straight. I was away on the weekend. I just had some personal things to do. Couldn't get the Nats on.
Oh, you couldn't get Masson where you were?
No, Friday or Saturday, couldn't get the Nats. Got home last night and the same thing happened. This happened to me on two events yesterday that I wanted to go to the end with. One was the men's golf event at ESPN. That's where it is. It's 5 miles from ESPN. It's called Cromwell, Connecticut, mm-hmm. or something like
but
that.
But it's the Bristol Open.
Yeah, I've played that. I've played that course a number of times.
With Dan Davis the Duke, right?
Hmm?
With the Dan
yeah,
Davis the Duke?
Yeah, with the Duke. It's a course where the only scary holes are like 15, 16, and 17, you know, and other than that, it's...
Beautiful-looking houses.
Yeah, it's houses.
A lot of grass.
Yeah, you go past a bunch of people's houses, and maybe they come out and steal the ball. You know, it's okay.
Did you see some of the rain that was happening in the middle of the back nine?
I heard the rain because you could hear it on the audio banging against the umbrellas. It seemed to be bad rain, like in a red cell. They had to stop, so... What I'm getting to is I'm invested in this. I'm not invested in the women's tournament because Nelly Korda hits 11 and 12 and she's sticking it in the water. Yeah. So she's not going to win. So that storyline is gone and I don't know the other players, you know. So I go over to the men's tournament where the leaderboard at one point is Scheffler, Hovland, Matt Fitzpatrick, Wyndham Clark, and Colin Morikawa. It's like one of the... It's one of the great leaderboards you're ever going to see.
Oh, that's why it's a signature event.
Yeah, well, it's a signature event for another reason. A signature event is something where they give away a lot more prize money than regular events. And it's a signature event because it follows the U.S. Open and everybody would take off.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't such a pricey thing for you to win, everybody would take off like Rory did. Rory bagged it, said, I don't want any part of this. Anyway, so all these players are in it.
Rory plays his own tour now.
Yes, there's the Rory McIlroy tour, and he just does what he wants to do. So all of these players are in it, and they're within two shots of each other. All of them are within two shots going down the back nine. We have company that comes over. My cousin Shelley, her younger son, Seth, his wife, and their younger daughter, we're here. I hadn't seen them in years. He's involved at the University of Chicago. He's running one of their schools. This is one of the
Princeton man.
Yeah, Princeton and Yale Law School. This is one of the best schools. This is a top 10 school in America, is the University of Chicago. Nobody would say anything different. Just because it doesn't play football doesn't mean it isn't that good a school. Okay. And she's a tenured professor at Northwestern. Hadn't seen them. Lovely. Their
child
is lovely.
So you had to stretch before the meeting.
Hmm?
You had to stretch, keep up with him.
I couldn't keep up. I would say what I had to say and then wait for him to be done, not understanding a word he said, even though he was joyful in his answer and brilliant in his answer. But when we sat down to chat, that was when they were coming back from the rain delay in Cromwell, and I don't know what happened. And then later at night, I saw... There's a playoff. In all honesty, while we're recording this, it is not even 8 o'clock in the morning. There's a playoff at 9. We will be done recording by 9, a playoff starting at 18 between Scheffler and Hovland. Scheffler had to make, down the stretch, 3 or 4 different holes, had to make par putts of 5 to 8 feet. And did.
Yeah.
And did. So they are, who do you think is going to win?
I think Scheffler will win. You know, the coolest thing that happened
Hovland's
this weekend.
Hovland's got all those Norwegian guys.
Yeah, we had
with
the
him.
Norwegian fans show up.
Yeah.
So I just think this would have been a great example just to, you know, say everyone wants to get out of here, volunteers, the tournament. We're just going to call it a draw.
Yeah. I often don't understand why, if soccer's such a big deal, why can't other sports end in ties? Football can theoretically end in a tie.
Yes.
Baseball cannot end in a tie.
No, I think the only time that's happened is in an All-Star
Basketball
game.
Basketball cannot end in a tie.
Small moment. No.
Hockey can end in a tie.
You would not have seen this. Just great camera work. I love when you see players who are sort of in the scoring area, who are watching players still on the golf course.
Colin Morikawa was sitting there.
Colin Morikawa doing, you know, phantom golf swings with a club, working on a couple of fields as he's watching Scheffler putt out.
How bad was the rain?
It looked horrendous.
Oh, yeah. So they had to stop.
Again, if you get to the short par four and you sit there going, this is probably a half of a shot swing by not letting me take a break here. I'm waiting for you to call and you're not doing it.
But they had to call it. I guess they had to call it. So I missed that. Then I missed the end of the Nats game. Like, what is my panic about the Nats? Well, any reasonable fan's panic
Lovely.
Is ninth inning. Yeah, well, specifically Richard Lovelady and
the final strike.
You know, yeah, but it's the ninth inning because you just watched it with the Phillies. You watched a good team beat a not as good team, and you watched them beat them 3 days in a row in the top of the ninth. What is the difference when they play in Baltimore? It's the bottom of the ninth. It's still you have to get through the ninth. So I was unaware of what was going on, and I just clicked on it, and I got the fact that the Nats are up by one run and Andy Pooley is out there on the mound and he does the thing that drives me crazy. He walks somebody.
Nice.
Relievers should not walk anybody. It's free. You don't give the free pass. You don't do it. So now I'm afraid they're going to lose because now the tying run is on and now the winning run is at the plate. And then I get a text from Saliza that says, we win. Because he's 20 seconds ahead of me, and it's a 4-6-3 double
just
play.
Just trying to set up the double play.
It's a 4-6-3 double play.
But and again, I'm following on GameCast because I had to excuse myself to do bubbles with the captain outside.
So I missed it. So the two things I wanted to see over the weekend, I missed
On the Orioles side, it comes down to the Pete Alonso in the first, which was just telegraphed immediately as you saw the count get to where it was.
And he hit a home run.
Holiday home run. But it's all about Luis Garcia Jr., what he's done over the last week and
good
the
hitter.
Entire month of June. So I think this is maybe 5 consecutive games with home runs. I think he's at 9 for the month of June.
Which yesterday. Schwarber did years back, and now Schwarber and has 30th home run
these
before July 1st.
Garcia home runs have a little bit of that Schwarber quality. They're going out low and quick.
They go out low and quick, but his swing is a lot slower because the other guy's a coiled snake.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no question about that. So my feeling is Garcia should play every day. The baby manager doesn't do that.
No.
He should play every day, and he should play second every day. That's his position. He shouldn't be on first. They should make Meade into the first baseman or somebody else into the first baseman. And they should bag, you know, these other guys that are floating around at second and third and first all the time. Get rid of them. They're not major league hitters. Well, Nunez is a major league hitter.
Yeah, and thinking about positioning, thank you to the Orioles who decided to give Alonso the DH because they put someone at first who sort of helped us get that lead.
Yeah, yeah.
Asalo.
They don't really play defense as well as you'd like them to play defense.
No. Could you hear Jason scream all the way from Baltimore when we lost 2 out of 3?
No. I was watching with the big boys. We're looking at it. We got to get the boys to a summer baseball game at Camden Yards.
Oh, yeah. Get some boots.
Nice. Get the lemonade. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's really nice. So what else? So I was away. I played golf. I have to talk about this briefly. Our friends live in Lido Beach. If you don't know the geography of the South Shore of Long Island, close in to the Queens border and the New York City border.
So this is
border.
Suffolk County?
This is Nassau County.
Nassau County.
Nassau County, close in. So there are a bunch of beaches starting in Brooklyn, going through Queens at Far Rockaway and coming around to Nassau County. There is Atlantic Beach. There is Long Beach. There is Lido Beach. There is Point Lookout. Point Lookout probably has 12.
Where's the famous concert venue?
That's Jones Beach.
Okay.
Jones Beach is further out, further east. So Lido Beach is, and this gets sort of complicated. Lido Beach and Point Lookout and Atlantic Beach are part of the town of Hempstead, under the purview of a town, Hempstead. Long Beach is its own separate city, so it is not under the purview of the town of Hempstead. The Lido Beach Golf Course, which is owned and run by the town of Hempstead, gives fabulous discounts if you are a citizen of the town of Hempstead, as does, say, Bethpage. You can play Bethpage Black for $40 if you are a resident of Nassau County. You know, and if you're not, it's, I don't know, it's 100 or whatever it is. So the town of Hempstead makes available the Lido Beach Golf Course for a very small amount of money. But if you, you know, if you live in Long Beach, which is like a block away, it's double the price. Anyway, it gets complicated. This guy Barry played with me and I took him out. We played as a two. We started out as a three, but the three who we played with, John, who was about 40 years younger than us and hit it where a 40-year younger guy ought to hit it, left us at hole number four to join the twosome in front of us. Better players, younger players. Fine, totally fine. No problem. I'd played Lido Beach Golf Club 40 years ago, 50 years ago, when I was living there, and I didn't know how to play golf. I don't know how to play golf now. But I mean, I played once in a while. I said, this might be fun. Let's go out and try and do it. There are homes that border it. It's bordered. It's about a half a mile from the Atlantic Ocean, and then there is the inlet, the channel that's, you know, on the other side. So there's water and houses and all of that. And it is, and I mean this in the best possible way, it's a dog track. I mean, come on. You know, it's totally flat. I walked the entire course. I had a pull cart and walked the whole course. I was proud of myself for that. And it's wide open and, you know, there's water, but you can avoid the water. And I probably shot, if I kept score, in my head a little bit, I probably shot in the mid to high 80s. I mean, I had a good day.
Yeah, feeling it.
Yeah, I had a good day because it wasn't the hardest track. And the front tees.
Everyone knows your game travels.
Everyone knows that. The front tees are the red tees, which are normally the women's tees. But Barry and I played them. And they made, you know, the reason they have a variety of sets of tees on a golf course is to accommodate your ability. Right. As you get older, you move up because of ability and pace of play. If you're out there hitting three woods on every single hole after a driver, you're slowing down the group. You're slowing down everybody behind you. And that's why people should play at appropriate tees. And our appropriate tees now are the furthest up. And it was lovely. You know, I had a good time. It was about 70 degrees, 75 degrees. It was breezy, not windy. And I really enjoyed myself. I was so happy to do it. I didn't keep an official score or anything like that. So one guy, I'm about to walk to the range, mats on the range, you know, balls that are retrieved from the sea that are 600 years old, that are misshapen and horrible to look at. You're just going to hit 20 of them.
Nathaniel Hawthorne once hit this ball.
Yeah, you're going to hit just 20 shots with irons because, you know, you can't hit woods on these greens. It's not big enough. I mean, I can because I can't get it more than 130 yards, but normal people can't. And one guy says to me, oh, well, what are you doing here? And I go, well, I'm visiting some friends in Lido. I used to live here.
So he recognized you from Newsday?
Not exactly. No, because he was about 22 years old and Newsday was way further back in the rear view. And he said, what are you doing? And I told him that. And he goes, no, what I mean is, why are you playing this place? I said, what do you want me to do? You want me to play Shinnecock? I'm here. This is what I want to play. I'm not that good. You know, and so, and then we had that other, you know, and this happens occasionally. Carol hadn't seen this. We are at a Walgreens. We are waiting to be picked up at a Walgreens in Long Beach after Carol had to buy something. And two different people come over and they start, it's him.
Talking
to him. You know, can we take a picture? You know, and they're different people. And she had not seen that. And she said, does this happen often? I said, yeah, sure. It's okay. Because, I mean, her first reaction is, well, you're bothering us. No, you're not.
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's completely lovely. It's fine. They tell you their life story and you pose for a picture and it's lovely. But I enjoyed playing Lido. I hadn't played it in so many years, and I enjoyed it. And it's, you know, three of the greens were temporary greens, so they're trying to fix the course up. It's hard. It's hard because it is buffeted by, you know, weather all the time. But it was, you know what I mean? It was really nice to play. It was a Muni.
It's back to your origins. What's interesting for me is there is a famous Lido golf club from, you know, 100 some odd years ago.
I learned all about it when that course was originally built. And it was not on the site where it is now. It was more in town. It was considered the best course in America.
Wow.
And they tried to recreate it. Historically, they tried, I was told, to recreate it in Minnesota. But it doesn't have the wind. You know, it's not quite the same. Who'd they bring in to do the course on one of the redos?
Was that a Doak?
No, way earlier than that. Oh. More famous.
Oh, you're thinking about Rainer.
Yeah, Seth Rainer. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, it. You know, there's... There is this place. It is the southernmost part of Long Island. Now, the southernmost part of Long Island stretches 100 miles, but you can't get any further south than pretty much on the ocean.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. You know, next stop is Portugal. That's how it works. But it was great fun.
Did you swing through a dairy barn?
There was no dairy barn. There was a Marvel, though. Okay, so the Marvel, and you're going to say Marvel, you mean Carvel. And I go, no, I mean Marvel. Marvel was opened in Long Beach. Actually, it's technically in Lido. It's got to be 75, 80 years ago. And they named it Marvel because Carvel was so popular there.
Is it an ice cream place as well?
Yes, it's a custard place.
Oh.
It's still there. It still looks exactly the way it looked then. Made me so happy to think it was still there. A lot of things were still there. I went by my old house. The first house I ever bought at 537 East Harrison Street in Long Beach. And these were one-floor houses. When I bought this house, for $29,500. You cannot get a car for that now. $29,500.
Still working off that mortgage?
That mortgage is paid off. The others have not been, that is. It was one floor. It had four or five rooms and one bathroom. That's all. That's all it was. When the Hurricane Sandy went through about 8 or 10 years ago and destroyed much of Long Beach and Atlantic Beach and Point Lookout and Lido Beach, people built up. My old house now has three floors. I did not recognize it. It's a different color. It's straight up and down. If I hadn't seen the number, I wouldn't have known it. But the house next door, where Harvey and Jeannie Pace lived, is still that same one floor, four or five room, one bathroom house, which made me very happy. Very happy to be there.
14 years ago, Sandy.
But it was before COVID. And so everybody built, everything had to be built. We'll take a break. Michael Wilbon, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Certain flavors instantly transport you back in time, like those classic, refreshing freezer pops everyone lived on as kids. That's why you want to try the new Firework Freeze 5-Hour Energy Shot. It will completely blow you away. They have officially taken a beloved freezer pop classic and reimagined it into a delicious, convenient energy shot. It's a serious flavor explosion from the very first sip, perfectly blending juicy cherry, citrusy lime, and that sweet candy-like blue raspberry. Honestly, it tastes exactly like the real thing, but with a major upgrade. You get that iconic freezer pop flavor you crave with absolutely none of the sugar. It's the ultimate zero-sugar portable summer companion that sparks a tasty flavor sensation and keeps you moving, whether you're headed to the beach, working late, or traveling. You need to stock up on this flavor immediately. Ignite your taste buds with a Firework Freeze-flavored 5-Hour Energy Shot. Now available online at 5hourenergy.com or find it on Amazon.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is, and we have played him before, Gus Gustafsson. It is not Chris Kristofferson, it's Gus Gustafsson, who said, I wanted to send along two songs from my corner of the world here in St. John's, Newfoundland, in Canada. This is my first new single, Love the Song, came out on June 18th. The song is about the different ways we've shared music over the years, from records to burned CDs to Spotify playlists, and how, despite all the changes in technology, people still fall in love with songs because someone they care about shared them. It's also my little tribute to punk rock, since those were the songs that got passed along to me. I've recently had it played on radio at a few different spots across Canada, and DJs that spun it said good things. It's very lovely that he sends us, you know, he says, thank you for playing my music. Your playing my music has opened some doors for me here in Canada. How cool is that? Your jingle segment is truly a gift to independent artists. Happy to do that. Plays in Michael Wilbon. And I have to read this email from John B. in Chantilly, Virginia. Wilbon will love this. I just read a short article that Hallmark Movies will be making a Chicago Bears Christmas movie. I predict the movie to follow a woman who just recently gave up on love and had to move back home to run her dad's Italian beef restaurant stand, which also sells Christmas trees in downtown Chicago. She isn't looking for love, but finds it when a man down on his luck and hungry for a beef sandwich while needing a Christmas tree stumbles on the stand. It's love at first bite. They bond over the success of the Chicago Bears' Iceman of a quarterback with a bet that if the Bears win the Packers-Bears games, she must go on a date. She reluctantly agrees to the bet. That following Sunday, the Bears pull off another miraculous victory against their heated rivals. The woman and man go on a date at Mike Ditka's steakhouse, then go to a gazebo at Navy Pier overlooking the great, wonderful Lake Michigan. They have their first kiss where love rings abound. Then her dad has a heart attack, his 10th one, after eating a Polish sausage. He's in the hospital, but luckily the man she met is a cardiologist who heals her dad to perfect health. They fall madly in love, and the rest, as they say, is history. The ending shows them all at a Bears game against the Lions, where you see Wilbon with Richard Dent, Michael Jordan, and Dick Butkus. Well, not Dick Butkus. All cheering for the Bears' victory. Do you think Wilbon will agree to be in the movie, or will he say, no, I am not surprised about this movie, not shocked at all. I expected her to fall in love with a man and for him to save her father's life. I will hang up and listen. John B. from Chantilly, Virginia. Luke Russert, they did this last year with the Buffalo Bills, and Russert was in it. Would you be in it if they asked you?
No.
No?
No.
Why?
I'm not an actor.
Neither's Luke.
Man, I know you and Stephen A. like to, you know, be showmen. That's not what I do.
Excuse me, I've seen you in Mr. 3000.
Yes, you're in Mr. 3000.
Well, you're in. Yeah, that was different.
No,
that
you're in the Michael B. Jordan movie.
Oh, yeah, Creed.
Yeah, but PTI was in that, not me in some cameo. Not the same.
You would not.
There's no gazebo at Navy Pier.
All right, so you would, well, it's a gazebo in all the Hallmark movies, all of which are filmed in Toronto.
Sure.
They're all filmed
sure.
in Toronto. So you would, if they asked you, Mike, would you please just be in, we'll give you one line, would you do it?
No.
Really?
No, you can't do that.
I would.
You know, the Italian beef, right.
No, he's like making that
100
up.
100 yards from me.
He's making
that
up.
That was pretty good. That was better than the gazebo at Navy Pier.
Okay. So you would not be in it.
What if it was Perry Mason?
Raymond Burr different. Was brought back.
Perry. I told you guys, I get my shirts done. I get my dress shirts made in the very shop that Perry Mason had suits made.
That's phenomenal.
When Raymond Burr had suits made when he was Perry Mason. And I was like, it looked similar. It looked familiar to me on television. And I say to one of the proprietors, I just said, you know, this is crazy, but this looks like the street or the facade where Perry Mason, and he goes, yeah, because it is. So great. So awesome.
Let me stay with this. What if Dent agreed and Waddle agreed and they said, Mike,
no.
You got to just stand with us. You just have to stand with us.
Those guys are Bears, man. I'm not a bear. I'm a Bear fanatic. But those guys actually wore the jerseys.
I understand. Luke didn't wear the jersey when he was in the Buffalo one.
Tell me what numbers you can and I'll do it. If you tell me what numbers Dent and Waddle wore without help.
I don't have any. I don't. Waddle, I would have no chance. I know that Butkus wore 51. I know that.
No Dent. Only Super Bowl MVP the Bears ever had. You don't know Dent.
86?
Actually, I'm a little surprised.
86? 85? Not close.
And Waddle wore 87.
I would never know Waddle. I mean, he's a wideout. I would not have. I mean, the last important, you know, the least important thing on the Chicago Bears was the wideout.
That year. Yes, it was.
Right? Like, you could that's have been right. the wideout. But anyway.
Well, that's not exactly.
They didn't.
I don't want Waddle to hear this, but
Okay. I was away. I watched no soccer over the weekend, none. You watched how much?
A lot, yeah. Now, that's you know, what's relevant in the world right now. I watched no golf, not a swing.
Oh, no, you missed it. It was good. No, wait, you didn't even watch Nelly Korda sort of blow up on the back nine?
I did watch some of that. I watched the LPGA.
Right.
There's no golf until the British Open. That's just the deal. There's no golf.
Your girl shot 73. Was over on the day and was over on the back and rinsed it.
Yep. She didn't have a good turn. Look, even the greatest Even the number one player can't beat, as we know with Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler, if he can win this playoff, will just be getting the second win of the year.
Well, let me go over this. There was a leaderboard yesterday. Everyone within two shots of Scheffler, Hovland, Morikawa, Clark, and Matty Fitz, and you didn't watch it?
No, I wasn't available to watch it. I wasn't available. I was doing something much more important in Washington, D.C., downtown, with some people you know. I was sort of the subject of the participant in a fireside chat at, you know, a new club in D.C., fabulous club, the Ned.
I've been there. And, I went there with Sally. We had dinner.
It was okay.
Yeah.
So I was there yesterday. That went on from like 2 to 6, and then a little dinner at Joe's, and that went on till about 8:30. So no golf.
Okay. We are apparently playing. We, the United States, are apparently playing Bosnia Herzegovina. I'm gonna guess we should beat them. Yes.
No. I mean, we've won. We've lost 12 straight times to Europe.
Really?
European countries. 12 straight. The last time we beat somebody was Bosnia. I think in 2021.
Right.
So, I'm not going to say we should beat them. No. I realize in the rankings they're probably similar, but at this point you got to throw that out. And I don't know. I mean, the U.S. is playing so well.
Yes.
And if Pulisic looks like he did in that cameo, more than a cameo, 25 or so minutes in the third game, the final group game, then okay. I mean, you know, maybe, but I don't know what the betting odds are. I don't care.
I don't either. I just assume that that the form we're in, that we should win, because I don't think of Bosnia Herzegovina as Spain or Germany or France.
Do you know the form Bosnia is in?
No, I do not.
So you're doing Harry America, and you're doing You know, we're playing well, so we got to win.
Well,
you know,
I wouldn't that against Spain.
I wouldn't say it against, when I said just now we've lost 12 straight games, I didn't say to Spain or France or Spain, France, and Germany. I said anybody from Europe.
Right.
That's going to inform my leaning until I see otherwise, and then great. Maybe we beat Bosnia, and then we got to go against Europe that's, you know, England or something. Until then, I'm not going to get crazy.
Is there any team that you watch that is playing either far better or far worse than you thought?
I don't think Spain's playing particularly well. They've come on lately. Germany hasn't. You know, I know they had a couple of big wins, but against like nobody's. Don't know that they're playing that well. You heard me ask Taylor Twellman that sort of on the side last week. Brazil, not burning it up, not looking like Brazil, of usual vintage.
Right.
But the African nations are like, wow. Are you kidding? Where'd this come from? Not to mention every country out there. I mean, you look at like Norway and the Netherlands, and half the players are of African descent.
Yep.
And I don't mean five generations ago. I mean like now. And it's like, man, what soccer is? It looks different. It sounds different. And I don't know how that's going to play in the knockout round.
Well, I can't speak with any authority whatsoever on this, but I think that soccer has traditionally been a sport in which someone claims ancestral right to play for a certain team, even though they A, don't speak the language, and B, haven't ever lived there. And it's okay. Soccer says it's okay, right?
Yeah, but that's not what this is. And that's one of the reasons I actually watch World Cup, to get a finger on the pulse of what is going on worldwide. What you have, and I know this from visiting Ireland a few years ago, is you have a situation maybe where it could be, it is in the case of Ireland, refugees who migrated across the world 18, 20 years ago. And now when I go to Dublin, I'm walking through the streets of Dublin, and it looks like walking through the streets of New York City. And I'm like, wait a minute, when did this happen?
Yeah.
And you can have people, tour guides, smart people say, well, here's what happened. people came across the country 20 years ago and were here. And now I walked in the University of Dublin, and the students, it looked like a Benetton ad from the 80s.
Yeah.
And so no, that is, they do speak the language. They live there. The French team is not people who, in Norway and the Netherlands.
But half the people on the United States team have never been here.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, I do.
Not at all.
I do. I think they're citizens somewhere else.
Listen to the interviews. No, they sound like basketball and NFL players. And no, they don't. And so when you hear the native talk, Japan's goalkeeper is black. Japan. I'm not guessing. I'm telling you because I watch. I'm not watching golf.
Yeah.
Watching World Cup because I want to see what is happening in the world. Golf ain't going to tell me that because golf ain't got that many people even after Tiger who look like me.
I'm more interested in what's happening around the block because I don't go to the world anymore. I'm too old to go anywhere.
Yeah, well, we're not going to be the same on that.
No. All right. Okay, I'll see you later.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Mark Feinsand will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
When the going gets weird, do weird, do weird turn pro.
It's the name of the song, Weird Turn Pro. This is, once again, Gus Gustafsson, who listens to the show and is our friend in Newfoundland, in Canada. Michael, if people like Gus Gustafsson, who make original music, want to have that music played on the show, how do they go about it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Plays in Mark Feinsand. I was a little bit surprised to read the other day, it had to do with the Nationals, that the Nationals were one game over 500. That wasn't the weird part for me, but that the season was already half over. In my mind, the season had just started. I mean, I realize we're at the end of June, beginning of July, but in my mind, they had played 50 games. They hadn't played 81 games. And so I would ask you, as someone who covers baseball, what is to you the biggest surprise at the halfway mark, which we have just passed, the single biggest surprise?
I mean, how could it not be the first place Chicago White Sox, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
This is a team that lost 122 games 2 years ago and was terrible again last year. And Chris Getz, the general manager, has done a really nice job of bringing in some pieces and developing some players. And, you know, they signed Murakami, who's been hurt right now, but was just a revelation.
Killing it.
When he first hit the majors. And this was a guy who got a two-year, $34 million contract. And it seemed like everybody in the league said, well, he's going to strike out too much. And I'm not sure the power is going to translate from Japan to the majors, but it certainly did. And when he got hurt, then people said, well, it was a nice run for the White Sox, but now they just lost their best hitter. And yet they're still in first place. So if you have to think about surprises, I think you start right there on the south side of Chicago.
Why is the American League so bad?
It's terrible.
Why?
What? I don't know. And it's sort of fascinating to look at the standings, and we're halfway through the season, and all these teams that are under 500 by several games are three games out of a wild card.
Yes.
Four games, four and a half. There are only three teams in each league right now that are more than four and a half games out of a playoff spot. And when you consider that one of the teams in a playoff spot in the American League is under 500, it's terrible. I don't really have an answer for it. A lot of mediocrity, fewer powerhouses, but I don't know. We've got a couple of really bad teams that are losing a lot of games, but there's no real explanation, as far as I can tell, as to why the National League has so many more teams over 500. I mean, obviously, they must be pounding them in interleague. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the American League right now is just in sort of a weird, bad spot. And if you looked at ranking the best teams in baseball, if you took the top 10, how many would be in the American League? Maybe two? I mean, the National League is clearly, the superior league to this point in the season.
I agree with you on the White Sox because they were historically bad at one point, and it was very, very recent. But I also thought you could have said the Mets, because I will ask you, the Mets were never supposed to fire their manager. But he said, we're not firing the manager. Then they fired the manager. What do you make of the Mets?
Yeah, I think the Mets are a bit of a disaster. This season has gone terribly for them. You know, I think the worst thing that happened to David Stearns and the Mets was making that NLCS run in 2024, because he took over that year with the idea of sort of getting a feel for the team and starting to build something there. And instead they had this late season run and they got to the NLCS, and now all of a sudden it was up. They better win the World Series next year. And they signed Soto, and then they had obviously this was a very eventful winter for the Mets. Stearns got rid of some of the fan favorites. He let Alonso walk. That hasn't looked like a very good move. You know, Brandon Nimmo, Edwin Diaz, who ended up getting hurt, but would he have gotten hurt if he was still with the Mets, et cetera. David Stearns has had a rough go as the president of baseball operations for the Mets. And, you know, some people think that he believes he's too smart for his own good, or at least he thinks he's too smart for his own good. He refuses to spend money on free agent pitching. And then every year we sit here and look at the Mets and say, well, they don't have enough pitching. Well, yeah, because they don't pay for it. And that's what you have to do in this league. And when you look at the teams that are, you know, the World Series contenders and the ones who you really expect to be there, you know, the Dodgers pay for pitching. The Yankees pay for pitching. You know, the Phillies pay for pitching. So I just think, you know, bringing in Freddie Peralta, Spurs had Freddie Peralta in Milwaukee. Really good pitcher, but he's a five-inning guy. He's not going to be a grinding ace who gives you seven or eight innings. You're not bringing in Garrett Cole here. You're not bringing in, you know, Yamamoto. And the Mets just haven't had enough pitching. I think firing Mendoza was probably the first step in Stearns trying to just do something to save his job and to save the Mets season, because he's hoping for the Philadelphia effect of, well, it wasn't really Rob Thompson's fault, but we fired him. Don Mattingly came in, and we got a bump from that. So they're hoping that they get a similar bump by making a managerial change. But anybody who has watched the Mets this year, if you're blaming Carlos Mendoza for what's been going on there between the injuries and the underperformance, you know, you're just looking for a scapegoat.
You think Stearns will be fired?
I think if they miss the playoffs, which certainly it appears that unless they have a big second half bounce back, they're going to, there's a good chance. I mean, Steve Cohen's spending an upwards of $400 million a year on this team's payroll, and to miss the playoffs in back-to-back years would be a colossal failure. That said, Stearns was the, you know, the guy that Cohen wanted, and firing Stearns after three seasons would be admitting failure on Cohen's part, and Steve Cohen hasn't failed in very many things in his business life. So, you know, maybe he's convinced that there's another way for Stearns to do it. But again, missing the playoffs 2 years in a row while spending, you know, nearly $800 million in payroll seems like something that could certainly cost David his job.
You mentioned Don Mattingly and the bump the Phillies got. It really is. It's right there. It's the same thing that happened with John Tortorella, you know, in hockey with Las Vegas. Is this coincidental, or does Mattingly bring something that's different?
I think it's coincidental. You know, it was good timing for Mattingly that they got Zach Wheeler back when he took over. Yeah. He's been outstanding. The Phillies were underperforming. And if you look at, you know, if you believe in the old back of the baseball card theory of these guys will regress to the mean or, you know, or rise to the mean one way or another, they were having a bad season. And again, I don't think it's Rob Thompson's fault. Just what, 3 or 4 years ago, they got the same bump when they fired Joe Girardi and gave Rob Thompson
That's
the job.
Right.
And
that's right.
So, you know, I think sometimes these things are, I'm not sure it's that Mattingly brings something, but when a manager gets fired midseason, sometimes it sends a message to the team to say, all right, that was the first move. If this doesn't get any better, there are more moves to come, and they're going to involve some of you. You know, Dave Dombrowski is not a shy executive when it comes to making trades. So, you know, maybe it served as a bit of a wake-up call, but I think getting Wheeler back, getting some guys healthy, their outfield is still a train wreck, and now Adolis Garcia is out for the year, although he was having a terrible year to begin with, so maybe him being out will only make them better in the long run. But the Phillies have certainly played well, and I think, you know, the fact that they're only three games behind the Braves now, we're going to be in for a fun race this summer. And, you know, we talked about the surprises earlier with the White Sox. I think you have to look at your Nats and the Marlins in that same vein of nobody, and I mean nobody, expected the Nationals and the Marlins to be in the playoff race halfway through the season, and yet here we are, and they both are. So, you know, I think seeing how some of these teams react August 3rd, trade deadline, will be really fascinating. Does Paul Tomei go out and buy, or does he say, this is a great learning experience, and however this plays out, it plays out, but I'm not going to mortgage any of the future to try to win a wild card spot with a team that probably isn't ready to advance deep into October.
Well, not if they have to play the Phillies in the actual ninth inning. No, they're not. Not if they have to.
Well, again, maybe they go out and get somebody who can pitch that ninth inning. That would probably help them. But I was working on a story that's coming out this week about what each contending team needs. And I swear, of the 24 teams, those 24 teams are still contenders at this point. I think like 19 of them, it was either rotation or bullpen. So pitching rules the day, and, you know, it's going to be a lot of arms moved. But I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of action until those last two or three days, because these executives are going to give their teams as much time as they can to decide if they are contenders or sellers. And with this sort of jumbled picture in the standings, we're not going to know that until the last 48 hours before the deadline.
Let me shift gears completely. It has tangentially to do with pitching, but we have now gone half a season with the automatic ball strike challenges. I have enjoyed them. I know they add a little bit more time to the games, but I enjoy watching everyone. The catcher at the Nats, Keibert Ruiz, is probably 0 for 6,000 now. They lose their challenges in the first inning. Like, what does baseball, what do you think of the challenges? What does baseball think of the challenges? Is it helping?
I think it is. I think the time that it's taking is minimal. When a hitter or a pitcher or the catcher challenged that pitch, I mean, that graphic's up on the scoreboard within 5-6 seconds.
Yep.
And you get the call right. The fans seem to really enjoy it. You know, watching that graphic and seeing that ball come in, and is there a little bit of red or not? You know, certainly when you get somebody who challenged the pitch and it's one of those just like no doubter, oh, the ball was right down the middle and somehow the pitcher challenged it, the catcher challenged it. Those are fun, but I think anything that helps get things right is good for the game, and it doesn't add a lot of time. It's not like the replay situation where you're going, you know, the umpire's got to throw the headset on and then talk to people back in New York, and you've got a 2-minute delay where everybody's just sort of, you know, they're playing music to try to divert the fans' attention from the fact that nothing's happening. This is pretty instantaneous, and you know, the catchers are certainly having some fun with it. Sal Perez, is you can tell he gets such a kick out of sort of challenging a pitch, getting it right. There was one at bat a few weeks ago where he challenged, I think, three pitches in a row. And I think Laz Diaz was the home plate umpire. Ooh. And he won all three challenges.
Yeah.
And then on the fourth pitch, it was way out of the zone, and Laz called it a ball and looked down at Sal Perez as if to say, you're going to challenge that one too there, buddy? Yeah. So they're having some fun with it. But I think when you look at the pitch clock and you look at the ABS system, MLB has really made some changes here that have been excellent for the game, for the pace of the game, and for getting things right. And I think they've got to be really happy with the way it's gone so far.
Good. This makes me happy because I enjoy looking at it. I do. Thank you, Mark. We will talk soon.
Thanks, Tony. Have a good one.
Mark Feinstein, boys and girls. We will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Thank you. is from Phil Coleman in Tucson, Arizona, who writes, after hearing the beautiful yet horrifyingly realistic AI versions of the mailbag theme, I felt inspired again to write another version of the mailbag jingle with the help of the woman to whom I'm related by marriage. I would like to believe every musician has a particular piece of music that inspired them to work hard and get good, as my wife and I say. For me, Arthur Pryor's Bluebells of Scotland was that piece I dreamt of playing as a kid. It has everything I love about music, flashy and technical sections with unaccompanied cadenzas as well as slow and beautiful sections. I submit a flashy version of the mailbag theme in the style of that beautiful piece of music, and through the power of music editing software, I'm accompanying myself on the piano. Even though I am the official euphoniumist of this stinking show, you once read an email from retired Colonel Michael Colburn, and let's just say that my behind clenched up. You see, Colonel Colburn may be more known as the 27th director of the United States Marine Band, but his recordings playing the euphonium were my inspiration for sound and style of playing. While I don't have the chops I did when I finished my master's in 2009, I hope this and other recordings I perform makes him and fellow brass players proud. That's just lovely. From Phil Coleman. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Yes, and before I get to that, speaking of Colonel Michael Colburn, yes. We got a note from him. He's now living up in Northern Vermont, but he's the director of the Orchestra of Northern New York, and they have a few shows going on for the 250th celebration of your country on July 1st in Watertown, July 2nd in Potsdam, and July...
These are upstate New York.
Upstate
places.
New York,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And July 3rd in Ogdensburg. So,
oh, sure.
Yeah,
way up.
You will want to make sure you go to these. These are going to be...
Are they free? Sometimes they're free.
I think these are free.
If not, just pay a nominal amount of
just
money.
Just sneak in.
See him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look at the praise that he just received.
Yeah, this is all former professional orchestra people, so this is really great. And Bethesda Bagels. We love them. Got the bagel sandwich today. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area near you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
From Todd from Crawfordsville, Indiana, longtime listener, second-time emailer. On a recent episode, you shared a note from musical artist Norwegian Soft Kitten, who recounted a performance at Wabash College, a school of 900 men in Crawfordsville, Indiana. I thought, wait, I've heard of Wabash College. In fact, I'm the dean of the college at Wabash College. Prior to being dean, I was professor of rhetoric and taught classes like a freshman seminar on baseball and the rhetoric of sport. I'm guessing Norwegian Soft Kitten's visit may have predated my 28 years at the school. I'm fond of saying Wabash is everywhere, despite its small size. This includes being an athletic conference rival of Nigel's Denison University, whom we beat 36-0 in football this past year. Admittedly, Denison won the D3 baseball championship this year, so I guess they have bragging rights for now. Each fall, I introduce new faculty to the Board of Trustees. A couple of years ago, when we had a new political scientist who earned her PhD from Binghamton, I noted it as Tony Kornheiser's alma mater. I expected that reference bewildered most of the attendees, but one of the trustees, who has been mentioned at least once on his high-quality podcast, responded with a hearty la cheeserie. Mr. Tony is indeed everywhere.
Yeah, where's the salute?
If the role is not already taken, I humbly request to be the unofficial dean of the college at the Tony Kornheiser Show. Sure, you got it. That's very, very lovely.
Double secret.
John Goldblum, who we talk to all the time.
Yes, we love.
Writes us all
we love
the time.
Talk. Yes.
Gang, I just wanted to update you that the Hindu wedding ceremonies from my daughter Janavi and the person to whom she is now married, Zach, occurred this past weekend in Cleveland. Ceremonies were perfect, as was the food, music, and dancing. Although I typically tried to hide in the bathroom during the horror, I have an unnatural loathing of the tradition. My wife threatened me with divorce, or even worse, no Indian food if I ditched my own daughter's horror dance. I survived to write this email, but more importantly, I lasted to sing the traditional last song at the bar mitzvahs and weddings, Born to Run. Sure, everybody uses that. Screamed every word. You know, everybody was left standing and attached pictures. That's wonderful. From Josh Harpool, does this count as my first David Aldridge moment? While listening to the pod and hearing that Chuck Todd was vacationing in Florida, I assumed he was in Miami, maybe Tampa. Hell, I would have even guessed Jacksonville, but never in a million years would I have guessed Pensacola, Florida.
Rock as and roll is, in Pensacola.
Yeah, as it is a town that I happen to live in and practice medicine. Now, don't get me wrong, Pensacola has some of the most beautiful beaches in the country, great seafood, and is one of Florida's best-kept secrets, but it's definitely more Roll Tide than Go Canes. And if Chuck is still in town, tell him oysters and a cold one at the Grand Marlin are on me. Isn't that nice?
That is lovely.
Kenny Ray, Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Chuck Todd goes to Pensacola Blue Wahoos games. I've had the Saturday night season ticket package since their inaugural season in 2012. I'll be at the next Saturday game on July 11th. Tell Chuck to come look for me in section 108 on the first base side. First round's on me. Chuck Todd is really...
Yeah.
We got all these... Michael Granberry writing. Kudos to Chuck Todd for calling out the ridiculous restrictions placed on a television package by MLB.com, but I have one that will even top the blackout rule that prohibits Chuck from watching the Nationals should they play in the Tampa market, which, as he noted, is more than 400 miles from Pensacola, where he was staying when it happened to him. Let's say Chuck and his family wanted to visit Alaska, which, of course, a lot of people do. If Chuck were staying in Anchorage, he could watch the Nationals via his MLB.com package, unless they were playing the Mariners in Seattle or in Washington, D.C. It turns out that MLB.com views the entire state of Alaska as part of the Mariners' home market. Google tells me that Alaska spans a total area of 665,384 square miles. Wow, that is some home market, Mariners. So both the home and road games of the Mariners are blacked out on the MLB package in Alaska, unless I suppose you're forced to fork over even more for the Mariners broadcast package. But hey, guys, let's get real here. Anchorage, the biggest city in Alaska, is also, according to Google, 2,289 miles from Seattle, which hardly seems, at least to me, like a home market infringement. Just for comparison, Seattle is roughly halfway between Anchorage and Dallas, and I haven't read anywhere that Dallas is now threatening Fort Worth as the city that, you know, Seattle is now threatening Fort Worth as the city closest to Dallas. I actually lived in Anchorage from 1975 to 1976, months after graduating from college, and made the best friends of my life there. So I'll go out on a limb here. I'll bet that you can count the number of diehard Mariners fans in Anchorage on the paws of any dog sled racing in next year's Iditarod. Mush on, MLB. Jacob Ironside in Dubuque, Iowa. Listening to Chuck Todd bemoan the MLB's draconian blackout rules, I could feel his pain. I live in Iowa, a state, believe it or not, has no Major League Baseball teams. One would think that would spare us from blackout rules, but it's the opposite. Baseball fans in Iowa get blacked out for the Cubs, White Sox, Twins, Royals, Brewers, and Cardinals.
That's brutal.
That stinks.
That's terrible.
That's one-fifth of the league. I have the MLB package, and none of those teams are available to watch for me. As I've gotten older, my old man rage has only grown over this ridiculous issue. You can get some teams' local broadcasts with a cable package, but are usually at the whims of the cable company on which team they'll give you. And in no instance will you get all six teams. That's terrible.
Yeah, I got it.
MLB.com should have some knowledge of that. You want to grow baseball. Don't cut out an entire state. Make
it available to people.
Come on. I mean, that's why they all watch Caitlin Clark, because they couldn't watch baseball.
Exactly.
Blaine from Atlanta, Texas. Not Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, okay. Texas. Recently, I emailed noting that I am from Atlanta, Texas, and you asked where that is. After hearing Chuck Todd detail his MLB blackout scenario in Florida, I feel compelled to tell you my story. Atlanta, Texas is in the northeast corner of the state, 30 minutes each from Arkansas and Louisiana. For television purposes, I am in the Shreveport, Louisiana market. 153 miles to my west is Dallas. 263 miles is Houston. So explain why I can't watch the Yankees, my team of choice, when they are playing the Rangers or Astros. It's outrageous to me. Blackouts. Hocus pocus junk.
Yes.
From Steve the Sycophant. My Google machine just let me know that Monday, June 29th, that's tonight.
That's it.
Is Strawberry Moon Night. Yes, the first full moon of the summer received the name of strawberry from many Native American tribes such as Algonquin, Ojibwe, Dakota, and Chippewa, as the wild strawberries were at their peak as the moon filled. So when the moon is officially full at 7:56 tonight, Eastern Time, look up and enjoy. Oh, and the moon's color will be more of a golden peach color than strawberry, but it still looks great. Is it supposed to be a clear night in Washington?
It's a little cloudy.
Yeah.
I'll take the kids out.
From Lisa T. on the road again. On a quickly thrown together long weekend in upstate New York, I had to find somewhere for us to stay en route the first night because our destination was available all the nights except one. Online, I saw a hotel in Glens Falls. Yeah. And I thought, well, there's a little from there who gets emails read on TK's pod, so that's good enough for me. Yes, David Carpenter's daughter gets emails read. Never been there before, but the hotel looked fine, so I booked it. We arrived, checked in, got the keys, and glanced at the envelope to see the room number, 511. To no one in particular, I said, of course, 511. You can't make this stuff up. The universe loves the littles. From Mark Spoor, the official bowling coach of the Tony Kornheiser Show, Clifton Park, New York, is between Albany and Saratoga Springs. That's it. That's email. I must have asked, where is Clifton Park, New York? From Nicole in Falmouth. Dear Farmer Tony, just thought you'd like to know that it is illegal in Massachusetts for businesses to refuse cash as payment. And on Cape Cod, you find a plethora of cash-only spots who, even in the year of AI 2026, are holding on to the one true legal tender. Thanks for all the years of laughs and nuanced sports debate. Thank you. From Lee in Vienna, Virginia. With all this rum talk, I'm disappointed that no one has mentioned two great rum quotes from The Godfather Part 2. Fredo, entertaining the group in Havana on New Year's Eve, suggests that they try one of the local drinks, like Cuba Libre or Pina Colada. The best, though, is when Fredo asks, how do you say banana daiquiri? And Michael replies deadpan, banana daiquiri, pure gold. Thanks for all the laughs. Chip Robinson, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. He's much too humble to say it, but when you ask Chuck Culpepper if he follows soccer, and he mentioned moving to the UK in 2006, what he didn't mention was he wrote a book about the sport. It's called Bloody Confused, and all the littles should check it out. He is a brilliant writer.
Yes, he is.
From Barry Sintner in Dayton. On Sunday, July 5th, Peacock is carrying all baseball games, including Nationals hosting Pirates at 4 p.m. Bone up on your Spanish. No, you just yell in when it says, what do you want? You say NBC Sports.
NBC Sports.
NBC Sports, that's what helps you. And from Sean Griffin in Leesburg, Virginia, Chuck Culpepper mentioned a whaling museum in New Bedford, Massachusetts. As a fourth grade student in the Sachem School District in Suffolk County, New York, home of Jeff Rulin, Sachem High School, I went on a field trip to a whaling museum in Cold Spring Harbor. I remember nothing from the trip. Incidentally, the population of Suffolk County is three times the size of the population of Cape Verde. When does Eastern Long Island get a World Cup team? If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I'm pleased and happy to repeat the news that we have, in fact, caught and killed a large predator that supposedly injured some bathers. But as you see, it's a beautiful day, the beaches are open, and the people are having a wonderful time. Amity, as you know, means friendship.
Was a guy they called Fat Mike. It might have been the best song that I ever heard. Play that punk rock song one more time. Tells more truth than anyone I know. Play that punk rock song. and gets weird. The weird. Who we are.